Hi, everybody. I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic. Just to get this started, I'd like to dedicate this presentation to a fellow that's gone to the big meeting in the sky. James Reynolds was his name. If you look at the tower, the two towers that happen to be up front, it might be my handwriting that is describing what the books are, but James is the one that actually collected them. And he and I were working together as more or less our unofficial archivists here about 20 years ago. He's passed on. But then also I'd also like to thank Ted and the board for putting me in a position of where they're trusting me to, in fact, do this in the first place. I have two objectives of this presentation, one of which is I'd like you to recognize that you are sitting in the place in which the founders of Atlanta AA dreamed about and tried to make a part of. So there's two parts of the presentation, one of which is what occurred prior to Napa. And then there's the second part, which it has to do specifically with Napa, with regards to that, is simply the gift of this place. I don't think this story has accurately been told before. If you look at Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, Bill W. actually thought that this meeting, Atlanta AA, came from Akron, but it didn't. It actually came from New York, then through Washington, D.C., which is Fitzhugh. That's our story, our southern friend that you see. And actually, the first meeting that happened to be in Atlanta didn't last. I'm not going to read all of this, but the first meeting was held on October 29th, 1940. Bill Wilson credited Irwin M. of the Cleveland, Ohio, a champion salesman of Venetian blinds, for founding AA in Atlanta. But that was not the case. They did have, again, in October of 1940, Marion H. was present at this first meeting along with some other people. He wrote New York headquarters in 1941 to say that he was sole remaining sober member in Atlanta. And by April of 1941, he was doing 60 days in jail. Now, our co-founder, which is Reverend Sam Georgery, and this is a book, it's very difficult to find, but it's about a reverend who actually was introduced to alcohol up in Brooklyn. It was his doctor's orders that he take some liquor every day to calm his nerves, and with a little, and it's whole milk, egg, a little sugar, cracked ice, and about a half ounce and a half of whiskey. And as you could imagine, he soon forgot about the little sugar, milk, and egg, and got booted out of the job of being a minister up in Brooklyn and ended up landing in Atlanta. He was actually, for all practical purposes, he found himself defrocked from the Westminster Presbyterian Church. He wandered to Chicago, to L.A., to Oklahoma City, to Jefferson City, and many points. Basically, he was homeless and a bum, divorced in 1936. On September 39, his wife bought Alcoholics and God by the Liberty magazine. He was enthusiastic at first, but he could not find AA, and Sam soon again was drunk. He came to Atlanta, placed an ad in the newspaper, said, "I should be dead, but it was, he still kept on drinking. He got a job selling tires, made no money, got depressed, and soon was drunk again. There was a tragedy. His younger son was killed in a car accident in California on April 16th of 1941, and that got his attention, and he stopped drinking then. It was then Sam read an ad that was put on by Steve M. that put on in the Atlanta Constitution on June 8th of 1941. Co-founder Steve M., this is the connection from Washington, D.C. Co-founder Steve M. was one of the group of six, and this is out of the Washington, D.C. archives. He is the one that ends up putting in this ad in, well, it's a newspaper article, basically. This is Steve M's efforts. Alcoholics Anonymous moves to Atlanta with a unique plan. And this is what Sam ended up reading and got those two together. And so this is the first continuous meeting, AA meeting in Atlanta. It's celebrated as June 12th of 1941. According to July 15th of 1941 letter, seven people were present, Steve M, Reverend Sam D, and Ernest S. and were among them, and they met in the Buckhead basement of Steve M. Two wives were there, too. an AA group grew under various names, the Downtown Group, the Midtown Group, the Wilson Group of AA, the Atlanta Group. It was the only meeting, AA meeting in Atlanta until February of 1946. I just thought, and I would throw this letter dated July 15th of 1941, and they were very proud of what was going on here. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, we have one of the finest groups of ex-drunks in the United States. It's something to boast about. Now, here we have a non-alcoholic champion of AA, a columnist by the name of Morgan Billick, who championed Alcoholics Anonymous, was nationally known. He also ran billed as being the largest Sunday school meeting at the Tabernacle in downtown Atlanta, in which 2,500 people would show up. He was a very popular man. And he says, I know a lot of drink addicts. I've been working with myself for years. This man got sober in 1923 on his own. But he's describing us, there's no magic attached to the organization. They have many failures, but they are also specialists in their work. They know all the angles. In it, no drunk can bring up any problems that they have not experienced in their lives. While Morgan Blake, former sports writer, an op-ed writer, was not a member of AA, he had become sober in 1923 as a result of his faith. He was to be an Atlanta newspaper champion for Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. And we also had the town drunk by the name of Bert Flynn. Mind you, we weren't doing anonymity at this time. Okay, everyone knew was the town drunk. And it was because AA got Bert Flynn sober that Morgan Blake realized that there was something that was going on here that worked. This is the first clubhouse. We actually kicked around with the YMCA and the Fulton Hotel. But in 1942, AA was beginning to grow. This is out of the documentation provided by the Atlanta Central Office. A small meeting room at the Robert Fulton Hotel was no longer adequate. We obtained a meeting place and club room at the 57 and a half Broad Street. Closed meetings were held on Tuesday and open meetings on Friday. The clubhouse was open 7 days a week. In addition to meetings, there were various entertainments and social affairs. We began to receive public recognition through the generosity of four well-known newspaper columnists, Morgan Blake, DOVs, Pierce Harris, and Ernest Rogers. And between them, I think these four men probably wrote as many as 50 newspaper articles favorable about AA in the 1940s into the early 50s. This clubhouse was dedicated on June 12th of 1942, and at that time there were probably 60 AA members. Here's Bill Wilson's first visit to Atlanta, which is not documented in our written history. I love this, actually. We have Alcoholics Anonymous Chief, visits Atlanta. And you may not be able to read this, but when you rely on people to give information about Alcoholics Anonymous, they try to get it right, but they don't get it exactly right. If you see his picture, which is, of course, a little bit before anonymity as well, underneath it it says, doesn't get drunk anymore. So it doesn't say that he, stopped drinking. It just doesn't get drunk anymore. Right? Okay, but this is by Pete Craig in the Atlanta Journal. The founding father of Alcoholics Anonymous, that strange organization of former drunks, which is establishing an amazing record of restrictions and reformations, was in Atlanta visit Friday. He prefers to be known merely as Mr. Anonymous. Mr. Anonymous himself once was the one of the world's worst drunkards. The very conception of Alcoholics Anonymous was something similar to the DTs, the founding father revealed here with a smile. And this is my own opinion. One can conclude that Bill W. was about as anonymous as Clark Gable. But I'm not going to read this thank you note, but it's a matter of protocol. It's amazing that as many places that Bill Wilson would visit, that there was typically a thank you note that followed it. The manners of the man in terms of how he dealt with this. But I will say the memories of this experience will always remain. I wish I could find words to tell you how inspired I was by what I saw and heard and felt in Atlanta. Please also give my regards and thanks to Morgan Blake. And so there you have the Atlanta Journal. Seldom has a group had a better start than yours. Now, also, it's a little different times if an AA meeting back then wanted to get any kind of publicity whatsoever, and it's a lot different with the infrastructure that we have today. You put the news in the newspaper. This was just a tip. This is nothing special about this ad, just to say that what was going on at the 57 and a half Broad Street meeting was a regular newspaper article to just inform people on what was going on. Now, here's his second AA visit of Bill W., which is also not in our written history. And this is actually newspaper articles in anticipation of him coming. He will be addressing a group of Atlanta ministers, physicians, and businessmen at a luncheon. It's very interesting when you look at this. You don't even know that he's actually an alcoholic, but the number of people that are interested in him are the ones that are written about are physicians, businessmen, and luncheons, and that's who he was addressing in many cases. He will also address an open meeting at the AA Club Room at 57 and a half Broad Street. And here we go. Atlanta, visit of Bill W., Alcoholics Anonymous to entertain Uncle Bill. And, you know, again, with what do you call the main meeting? Members of the Wilson Club of Atlanta. So we're not dealing with much, again, with anonymity. I'm sure that Bill did not like that at all. Opening a full schedule at 9:30 a.m. Monday, Bill will hold a conference at the federal penitentiary here. He will be followed by luncheon with 100 Atlanta ministers, physicians, business executives, and various government officials are scheduled to attend. AA is a combination of religion and applied psychology that any alcoholic with a genuine desire to reform can take advantage of. And here we go with more of Uncle Bill, and I think that other one was in the Journal, this one's in the Constitution. Again, more on Uncle Bill before he comes. Anybody recognize this? If you read the 12 and 12, I can't remember what step that we end up being called a bankrupt idealist. Well, he was using that phraseology and did so as a headline in May 30 of 1944. So that concept was around for a long time before he actually ended up writing about it. Again, that was in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. He related an idea fostered by himself with a native, a doctor, and after an alcoholic, had given courage, hope, and another chance to more than 12,000 defeated drunks. That's how many of there were at that time. And more on the alcoholic as a bankrupt idealist. And Bill loved to compliment people, and sometimes they think he went overboard. And in this case, when he says, Bill described yesterday's luncheon as the biggest turnout since the dinner Rockefeller once gave. Wow, that's quite a claim. But also Bill paid an informal visit to the staff at the federal penitentiary, and at one time or another, I believe that was the fifth oldest penitentiary meeting in the country. It was already meeting, but that, I believe it was Bill's visit which helped getting volunteers into the prison. Bill brings tears to the eyes of listeners here. In a sincere address that frequently brought tears to the eyes of his listeners, Bill, founders of Alcoholics, told a group of 100 leading Atlanta businessmen, clergymen, physicians, and government officials that the work of the organization has wrought a wholesale miracle in the mind of curing chronic alcoholics. Right now, he declared, I believe AA is the fastest growing organization in the country. I would have said the U.S. Army was. I mean, it was World War II. Okay. Right now, he declared, the Atlanta chapter of AA, known as the Wilson Club, there we go again, breaking anonymity, has ever-increasing membership and includes some of the city-leading businessmen. Here we go. A great man with a great message. This is heady stuff. This is an article about Bill Wilson by Morgan Blake. Few indeed are the public speakers these days who can hold the attention of an audience for more than 30 minutes. At the end of that period, many listeners find they have urgent engagements elsewhere. But Monday, I heard a man deliver two addresses of considerably over an hour each, one at noon, one at night, and in both occasions, the audience were intensely interested. In fact, I have to drag out that old word, spellbound, to accurately describe the reaction of the listeners. Mayor Hartsfield was there, also Chief Hornsby. In my long career as a newspaperman, I have naturally encountered many remarkable personalities, and Bill is one of the most amazing young men. I don't get the young men part because Bill was 49 years old at the time. I have ever run into in person and appearance. He would hardly be selected to play the leading role opposite Rita Hayworth in Hollywood. He is long and lean, built along the lines of Ichabod Crane, and looks as though he were a country boy come to town. Bill would never be mistaken for Apollo. Man, is that heavy language or what? But when Bill gets up to speak, the magnetism of the man immediately grips you. He is a grand person, as plain as an old shoe, yet brilliantly educated, forceful in delivery, and he holds you in the hollow of his hand. And the story of the long battle with a dread malady, his many failures to overcome it, and then his victory make up the most fascinating adventure as I have ever listened to. Bill's story of how that higher power, how God came into him, in that hospital room when he cried aloud for help, is one of the most tremendous stories ever told. Every man and woman in the audience, as they listened to it, experienced a spiritual exaltation in their own lives. It's a great thing, said Bill. When the dark days come now, that I can say, thank God I'm sober. And when the days are bright, I can also say, thank God I'm sober, so I can really enjoy my blessings. And the conclusion was, Bill is a great man and a great message. May 31 of 1944. And again, Bill followed it up with one of his thank you notes. Where shall Lois and I find words to tell you that we have heard and saw and felt while I was with you? Of course, there are not any words, but you know that we must have heard the voice of Providence, seen a great miracle, felt the two very small ships happily afloat on that wave of happy destiny which with AA has become. And what shall we say of the thought and care which went into all the splendid arrangement? And how shall we tell you the appreciation of those things that you did for our comfort and entertainment? He never missed an opportunity to say thank you. And again, this is the, I'm not going to go try to read any of it, but it is the fifth oldest AA prison meeting in Atlanta, which he, again, allowed volunteers to come. And again, anything happening in AA got in the newspapers. And here's AA's fourth anniversary. And note to Bert Flynn, I love the fact that we had a band here today, because when their fourth anniversary, the entertainment will be the music of the Atlanta Police Quartet, minstrel by Green Adair and Bert Flynn. Remember him, the drunk, former drunk, former vaudeville stars, boogie woogie piano music, and the original compositions by Vern Manley. I've never heard of him. 9 years. A drummer and xylophone player for the Paul Whiteman Orchestra. So they went out and got, but here we go with AA being basically asked to leave. And in this case, they were going to do a remodeling of the property. And so on January 4th of 1946, the Atlanta group moved into 70 and a half Auburn Avenue. Also in the history referred to as the Houston Street Clubhouse. But unfortunately, they did allow smoking at a meeting, and most likely somebody left a cigarette in the wastebasket or something along those lines, because that clubhouse lasted 10 days before it burned to the ground. Wow. And this was actually the $20,000 that fire raises the building, which left them. The second floor where the fire was said to have originated was used as the club room for Alcoholics Anonymous, known as the Atlan. That was what they understood it to be, the name of the group at the time, but unfortunately. So we get a controversy, how to get a new clubhouse after the January 1946 flyer. Morgan Blank, recognizing the great work we were doing, decided to do something about getting a permanent meeting place for AA. He offered to head the committee to solicit funds to purchase a new home for us so we could expand and be in the position of the great number of people from all walks of life. He wrote an article published in the Atlanta Journal on February 4, informing us as well of the project, of the public, as his new project. Some had us visions of the finest AA home in the Southwest. Others felt the outside financial help would take away from our primary purpose. The pros and cons led to a verbal battle royal. Arthur Y., original author of the Atlanta History, attempted to explain this controversial through the use of Tradition 7, except it hadn't been introduced yet. That was to take place 2 months later. Well, the split resulted in the downtown group split into the North Avenue group and the Central group. The Central group was on the left. You see how anything happening in AA, it ends up in the newspaper. Okay, and even in a split like that. And I just threw in here, this was a sample article that was written in support of AA, and this was actually an advocate. What about a state hospital just for alcoholics? It was by Ernest Roberts. The North Avenue Group lost its lease after about a year and 18 months. And so here we have, again in the newspaper, we were homeless. And the eviction order said so. Who comes to the rescue? Mayor Hartsfield. He also had asked for help. The Alcoholics Anonymous seek new club rooms. Mayor Hartsfield Friday urged Atlantans to rally to the support of the Atlanta Alcoholics Anonymous and help find a new location for the club rooms and meeting places. Representative of the organization, so we'll skip the rest of that. And that ended up, the North Avenue Group ended up on 117.5 Hunter Street. Atlanta AA leased the entire third floor of the building on Hunter Street. I think this address was just taken, I-20 or I-75 and 85 ended up obliterating this address. There were two steep flights of stairs to climb. Although we were supposed to be sick people, we succeeded in negotiating these steps from day to day without casualty. AA stayed at this location for 2 years, and here we have our seventh anniversary. AA directed to drunkards, launched AA 7 years ago. And again, when we get to the eighth anniversary, retired drunkard stage birthday binge. But again, we end up needing to leave that place. So we outgrew it. And 522 West Peachtree Street became the next clubhouse. Late in 1949, began experiencing another growing spurt. We succeeded in leasing the second floor of a building on 522 West Peachtree Street. Mayors unselfishly gave their time, talent, and financial support to secure the success of this venture. The clubroom, meeting hall, and lounge at 522 West Peachtree Street proved to be the finest, largest, and most convenient AA quarters that we were privileged to assemble in. Again, that was written in 1949. Again, the 522 West Peachtree Street clubhouse dedicated. They nearly had 500 people attend that, and I think part of, you know, we're all over the place. We're all over the city right now, and I think it's, in some regards, it's more difficult for us to get that number of people together, which they were taking place in on a regular basis. The club room, again, 522 West Peachtree Street, the club room, meeting hall, lounge at 522 West Peachtree Street proved to be the finest, largest, and most convenient AA headquarters we were ever privileged to assemble in. The 522 Club was divided into three compartments, the largest being the auditorium when we held our meetings. This had a seating capacity of 400. The club room was nicely arranged with new furniture, kitchen, and a snack bar where regular meals were served. Due to remodeling plans in 1953, we were again forced to move. We were required to move to smaller quarters, this time the second floor of a building on Walton Street, and then to our first central office set up on Lucky Street. We remained on Walton Street until 1956, finally moving again to 298 and 1/2 Peachtree Street.